Welcome to the podcast, Your Time with James Sweetman. We make decisions all the time, but sometimes we can struggle with them. And that's the focus for this week's episode. You know, most of the decisions we make are fairly inconsequential. You know, what shirt to wear, what to get for our lunch, you know, maybe what route to take to work. Many of them are habitual, you know, and they happen automatically. There's no real consequence to them. Of course, with other decisions, though, we can struggle. And that's understandable because maybe there's more at stake if we're emotionally involved in something, you know, if we're making a decision or finding ourselves outside of our comfort zone. If there are consequences to our decision, you know, commitments that we're maybe signing up to for a period of time, ripple effects, the impact on others. Of course, underlying it all is the fear of failure or the risk of failure, of making a mistake. You know, the opportunity cost of the path not taken. With some decisions, there's time constraints. You know, you have to make a decision or you miss out on something, you know, or where something is quite finite. You know, it's a one-time event. For example, making plans for a wedding, or whether to apply for a job, or whether to leave a job or a relationship. You know, there's times in life when we're faced with bigger decisions, and sometimes we can struggle with them. Of course, behind it all is that great disabler of fear of failure, you know, and the regret of making the wrong decision. And in this week's episode, I'm going to share 10 tips that will enhance your decision-making skills or abilities. And there's a few observations, though, I want to share with you beforehand. If I put on my interview skills coaching hat just for a moment, decision making often appears on role descriptions as a competency. So when I'm working with clients, we often, you know, polish up our language around decision making and maybe having some examples that illustrate decision making. So if we look at decision making in a pure, almost academic type of way, what are some of the components that go into it? You know, the logical side of it. Well, first of all, we think about the context, what the particular challenge is, you know, what's involved, what's the scenario that I'm trying to make a decision in, what's the wider problem or issue. Then I go about gathering the facts. You know, I do some research, maybe I contact other people, other experts, I get their input. Then I analyze all of this information, I weigh up the options, I look at the different choices that are available, maybe the risks or consequences associated with those choices, and then I make the decision or I make the recommendation, as it were. You know, in a textbook way, that's the process of decision making. But we're not all Mr. Spock from planet Vulcan, so it's not all based solely on logic. And there are several challenges that I think we face in this area. And it's useful just to spend a moment exploring those before I share the wider tips on decision making with you. A little while ago, I was working with a coaching client and he had come to me trying to weigh up decisions or taking the right course for him in relation to his career. You know, he was feeling a bit stuck, had several options, not quite sure what the right option for him would be. And sometimes with clients, I look for their decision making strategy in a different context. So I asked him to, you know, take me through another decision that he had struggled with in the past. And he spoke about going into a shop to buy a suitcase for holidays. So again, that's a decision. He was aware of his need. He needed a bag to pack his clothes to go away on holidays. And I said, talk me through how you dealt with it. And he said he went out to this shop every lunchtime for a week and got the sales assistant to bring out several options for different bags of different shapes and sizes and design and rucksacks and traditional cases, whatever. And I said, what made you choose the bag that you chose in the end? And he said, well, I didn't actually choose it that weekend. My wife eventually went and bought one for me. And I was really smiling to myself because it was a fascinating story and I could just picture the scene. And I was sorry for the, you know, the poor shop assistant who was doing all of this work. But when we broke it down, that individual person's decision-making strategy, he was stuck in a loop. You know, there was procrastination with it. And in the end, the decision was made for him. And I said, were you happy with the bag that your wife chose? And he said, yeah, fine, grand. Yeah, no problem. It was fit for purpose. But yet from his own perspective, he wasn't able to get to that decision himself. And, you know, when I mentioned to him, you know, buying a bag is a lot smaller fry than making a decision around staying or leaving in a particular role, you can see where the challenge is. And of course, that brings brings us into the territory of procrastination, which might be a topic for a future podcast by itself. But what happened in that instance with that client was his decision-making strategy kept getting stuck in a loop. And by that, I mean, there's usually a request for more information and more information, but there's no criteria around what does success look like. And as I often would say to someone in those instances who's struggling with the decision, you know, how will you know when you know? Now, that might sound a bit bizarre, but it does sort of make sense. How will you know you're making the right decision for you? Because if you're not able to put some handrails on that, more information, more research, more time will never be enough because you've got no criteria of satisfaction. And that's one of the observations that perhaps we shouldn't lose sight of in this area. It's like, you know, what am I trying to achieve here? Or when will I know I'm at least pointed in the right direction? Another observation around decision making based on my experience is that we always make the best decisions we can in every moment. Like, think about that for a second. You know, at no stage did you ever say to yourself, I'm going to make a bad decision here, or I'm going to take the, you know, make the worst choice for myself. As the late great Maya Angelou said, we're always doing our best based on our knowledge, the resources at our disposal, and our levels of self-awareness. And sometimes when I'm working with people in this area, you know, I'll get them to voice or to remember some decisions that they made in the past that maybe they struggled with, and how by and large things tend to work out. If we go back to that definition of confidence, you know, can feed us with faith in self, with trust in ourselves. It's always useful to remember the fact that we make the best decisions we can in the moment, and that we can trust ourselves to make the best decisions we can in the moment. You know, interestingly, only this week I was working with a client, and in a different context, we were doing a little piece around gratitude. And one of the things that he came up with was, you know, he's grateful for the fact that he can rely on himself. And I said, isn't that a lovely, you know, something to have an awareness and to acknowledge? One of the other things we tend to do with decision making, for those of us who like control, and let's face it, that's most of us, we try to make decisions when the time is not right to make some decisions. And by that, I mean, we can do too much prediction into the future. You know, it's good to plan ahead, but too much of anything is not so good. You know, we're trying to predict all of the different variables that may happen down the line in an attempt to control them. And what we don't realize by doing that excessively, we're actually diminishing our own levels of self-confidence, because I don't trust myself enough to make the best decision when the time comes to make that decision. One other observation, and this one is sort of true as well. I know it's true for me. In many scenarios, when we're struggling to make decision, it's not the actual decision that we're struggling with, because we sort of know deep down what it is we should do or what the decision actually is. In reality, we're usually seeking the courage to make the decision. So we're weighing up all of these options, but deep down we might know what the right path is or the right choice is, and we're just looking to find the courage to make it. So that's something else to bear in mind in this whole area of decision making. So it's time for some tips on decision making, and I've 10 to share with you. So we're going to start at the beginning. Tip number one, it's a logical one. It's always useful to create the time and the space in which to make the decision. By that I mean it's getting a little clear-headed, getting centered maybe. You know, sometimes it's just going for a walk. Oftentimes the body has that, or the brain has that innate wisdom. You know, we'll often say to ourselves, I'm going to go for a walk to clear my head. Or, you know, we listen to some music, you know, we do something that allows us to think more impactfully. What I always find in this area as well, it allows the brain to do what it does best. You know, the brain is a question and answer mechanism. So if I'm posing some questions, you know, maybe what should I do? You know, should I do A or B? The brain will ruminate on that a little if we give it a chance. For me, that brings into play that old syndrome called tip of the tongue syndrome. You know, this is just an indication of how the brain works. You know, you know something, but you can't quite get the answer. It's like you've stored the name of that person, the name of the street, the name of the pop band in the warehouse of the brain, but you've forgotten where you put it. And if we ask the question, you know, what's the name of that street? You know, that question will still run, and it might run for several years until you're next driving down that street and you remember the fact you were trying to remember it. The more we try to struggle to find the answer, the brain often seems, or the memory seems, to let us down. But oftentimes what we do is we begin to ask ourselves a different question. You know, why am I so stupid? I can't remember it. And we ask a different question and back comes a different answer. And it's something like, I must be getting old because I couldn't remember that person's name last week. You know, that's sort of how the brain works as a question and answer mechanism. But we need to give the brain some time to go and find the solution, or to scan the information that we perhaps have forgotten that we already hold. One of the other things we can do when we're creating the time and the space to make a decision is maybe to time box it a little. It's like, okay, by the end of today, I'm going to make my choice, or I'm going to make my decision. So I'm just being a little bit, you know, I'm not leaving it how long is a piece of string. And when we're creating the time and space for a decision as well, we can maybe contemplate the wider context. You know, what is it I'm trying to achieve here? But I'll touch on that one again. So that's the first little tip, creating the time and space in which you can get centered, give your brain a little space to make the decision. The second tip is a little extension to the first one, and it's one that runs through a lot of my work. And it's taking a moment to contemplate, who do I want to be in the process of making the decision? You know, that piece around being human beings and not human doings. Sometimes when we focus on the question, what should I do? It's logical. But if we go a level up from that and we look at, well, who do I want to be in the process of making this decision? It gives me maybe a wider perspective, and it allows me to bring to the fore some qualities or traits or personality characteristics that would be of benefit to me at this time of decision making. And it's probably qualities such as clear-headed or calm or logical. And if I'm contemplating those, that's more than half the battle. You know, so then I'm aware of getting into that headspace that will be most conducive to effective decision making. The third tip is what I would label collaboratively independent. So what do I mean by that? Most of the time when we're looking to make a decision, other people will be impacted, or other people perhaps have some advice that they could offer, or are able to gather some information from the outside in, as it were. So I always think good decision makers are collaborative. So they're, you know, they're touching base with people who have information that might be relevant or who might be impacted by the decision. But ultimately, it comes down to ourselves to make the decision. You know, I'm blessed in many ways in that with the experience and the qualifications that I have, I'm fairly clear of what my own decision-making process is. So I can just go through the stages of it. And many of those stages I'm sharing with you in this week's podcast. But an example on that would be, say, a little while ago when my last book was out, and I was looking at the various different options that were presented for the design of the book cover. And some of them were only subtly different from others. And then there was a few that was left of center, and they were all printed off. And I was looking at them, and, you know, it was maybe down to two or three. And I showed them to Brian, I showed them to other family members, and different people chose different ones. And Brian had his favorite. And ultimately, he said to me, though, he said, James, you're going to get all of this input and opinions from others, but you know, at the end of the day, you're going to make the decision yourself. And that's sort of true, because I do take in other people's input, but at the end of the day, it is my decision. That was similar to when I was buying a suit or an outfit for the wedding. Got the input from the shop assistant, got the input from Brian, but ultimately, I made the decision on what I felt was right for me. So that's what I mean by collaboratively independent. Gather information, but know at the end of the day that it is your decision. Tip number four is something to maybe do a little less of, and that's around stop seeking perfection when it comes to making decisions, because there are very few decisions that can be perfect, because life just doesn't operate that way. Oftentimes we will be seeking the impossible. Think of that guy that I mentioned about choosing the suitcase for his holidays. You know, in addition to procrastination, which is one of the Achilles heels of effective decision making or time management, so is the other P word, perfectionism. And there's various reasons for that. But it's like most of the time I'm seeking something that is perfect, so someone won't give out to me, or I'll be feeling good enough, or, you know, I'm not making a mistake. What efficient decision makers tend to do, though, is they'll get to a point where good enough is good enough, and they'll leap, or they'll make the decision maybe without all the answers, but they will trust that they will be able to flex and strengthen their wings, as it were, on the way down. So it's like, it's good enough, I can jump now, and I can adjust further if needs be. So if we're running procrastination, or we're feeling stuck in making a decision, oftentimes one of those blocks is the request for perfectionism. And if we're aware of that, maybe we can shift down a gear. You know, let me go from 100% down to first class honors, almost at 70%. What is good enough? So we're almost at the halfway stage in the tips on decision making. So let me take a quick moment to thank you again for tuning in. I've been delighted with the feedback to this weekly podcast. It's been a labor of love for me. If you're enjoying it, perhaps you can pass word on, maybe subscribe or make a review, or even give me a star rating. I particularly like it when people contact me with learnings they've taken from it, or even if there's future topics that you would like me to explore. So back to the tips. Tip number five. Around decision making is to recognize that we're logical and emotional beings, but oftentimes when it comes to decision making, the emotions win out. You know, the logical approach to decision making is making lists, you know, the lists of pros and cons, almost like Mr. Spock from Planet Vulcan. You know, if you think about maybe at work, you know, you have a choice of a vendor or a supplier to use, and you might make a list of the pros and cons of each, and you see what list is the longest. Or even if I put my interview skills hat on again, if someone's an interviewer and they've been interviewing candidates, you know, they might do the list around the case for someone or the case against someone. But ultimately, when it comes to decision making, we tend to listen to our gut instinct. You know, we just have a feel around it. Oftentimes when we're looking to make a decision, it's like, how will I know when I know? Remember that question from earlier? People's response to that is often, well, I just feel it. You know, it's not just logical, it's also emotional. One other distinction in this area as well is that with problem solving, you know, that is a slightly different skill. They're related. You know, a decision can solve a problem, and oftentimes that's why we're making the decision. But not every problem itself can be solved by making a decision. And sometimes there, then, we're looking at the wider question around, you know, what would be a progressive decision here? What would be moving in the right direction? But back to that emotional and logical piece again, a little tip that I use here, and it's something that we often say, but maybe we could actually utilize in a more conscious way, is the old head, heart and gut. You know, we ask ourselves in the context of making the decision, you know, what would my head say? What would my heart say? What would my gut say? And I'm a great believer in not all wisdom is in the head. You know, the wisdom is also in the heart and in the gut. The heart being emotions, maybe, and the gut just being instinct. And the fact that there's three of them, at least you'll have a 2-to-1 decision. But oftentimes when I apply that little triad or that little model when I'm working with the client, it's usually a 3-0 result. The next tip, number 6, is a byproduct of one of my favorite exercises or frameworks known as the hero exercise. And I use this with clients in many different contexts, but it's equally powerful when it comes to decision making. So how does it work? If you think about maybe 2 or 3 people that you admire, and they could be from any walk of life, you know, known only to you, or they might be in the public eye. If they're in a newspaper or a magazine, you might read about them. You know, if they're in the public eye, they might be an actor or a leader, a politician, a writer, a fashion designer, who knows. Go with your gut instinct on this one. And for each person that you admire, and as I say, they might be known or they might be just within your own circle, note 2 or 3 qualities about each of them that you admire. And when we do that exercise, what we're doing is identifying values, some of the qualities or attributes that are important to you, because you can only see them in other people because they resonate with you. Then if we're facing a decision, we'll ask ourselves, well, what would so-and-so do if they're in my shoes? Or, you know, if I could phone them up and ask for some advice, you know, what advice would they give me? I did that recently with a client, and one of the people she admired, and it's one of the people who in the public eye who often appear high on this list with people, is Michelle Obama. And I said, imagine Michelle Obama there sitting across from you and you relate to her, the situation or the choices open to you. After a moment's consideration, what do you think Michelle Obama would say to you? And of course, this exercise completely takes place in our own heads. But what we're doing is just giving ourselves a slightly wider perspective or a different viewpoint. And we're actually assessing the scenario that we're in or the choices available to us through the lens of our own values, what's important to us. Because behind every desire for a goal or an objective or decision, you know, we're looking to act in a place that's consistent with our values, you know, what makes us tick on the inside. And that exercise linked into the hero exercise is a good one. And at minimum, it just gives us a little bit more headspace as well. So we're almost at the end. The next few tips really hang off what I would call some powerful questions. So we'll get through them fairly quickly. 7 and 8 are like mirror reflections of each other. Tip number 7 is to ask ourselves when facing a decision or options, what decision, what choice on my part would feel like progress? So what do I mean by that? You know, what decision represents movement forward or personal growth? Sometimes some decisions we can make that if we make them, it'll feel like we're regressing or it's status quo. You know, we're always growing and evolving as people. And sometimes the decisions that we are faced with is an invitation to growth. You know, there's a change that's trying to take place. So therefore, that question, what decision on my part would feel like progress, again, can just shine a light on perhaps what is the optimum option for you going forward. Tip number 8 is the opposite of that. What decision, if I made it, would feel like relief? Now, that one won't be applicable, you know, all the time. But for me, I can certainly relate to it. Many years ago when I left the corporate world, and that wasn't, you know, necessarily an easy decision to make. It's probably something that I had struggled with for a while. And oftentimes, if I'm struggling with something, you know, the body catches up and good old dis-ease kicks in. And sometimes when we are faced with options, it's not necessarily towards something positive, but it can be away from something that we perceive as negative. And I know when I made the decision to leave the corporate world many years ago, the overriding feeling afterwards was one of relief. And that brings us into the territory of just paying attention to those emotions again. You know, we're not all logical creatures all the time. And sometimes it's not necessarily that upbeat, excited, you know, even progressive type feeling. It's just a sense of relief for having made the decision. And of course, sometimes some decision is better than no decision. That's often the case in the context of work, where one of the qualities that perhaps is not so good as a leader or for someone who's in authority is indecisiveness. You know, you want to know where you stand because ultimately we appreciate certainty. So those two questions, 7 and 8 again, what decision would feel like progress and what decision would feel like relief or I'd feel lighter having made it. As I mentioned earlier, often the great inhibitor behind making decisions is the fear of making the wrong decision. But there's very few decisions that are completely irreversible. So therefore, tip number 9 is just to pose that question to ourselves. You know, what decision here is reversible or what's not reversible? In most scenarios, we will have an opportunity to change course, to change our mind, or at minimum to make another decision down the line. So a classic example would be there if someone decides to leave their place of work and they go and they are successful in getting another job or they move companies. And the fear is that it won't work out, you know, the grass being greener or versus better the devil you know. But sometimes we forget that, okay, if you're there for 6 months and it doesn't work out, well, then you can make another decision. You know, I can look for another position, you know, or even worst case scenario, I can look to the company that I was in and maybe see if I can go back. And it's often the fear of that will inhibit us making the decision in the first place. But from my experience, sticking with that particular example, We tend to find when we make a decision and we move forward, we've grown as an individual. So we're no longer the person who was there in that previous job, for example. And there's that old wisdom or adage that, you know, you can never go back. You're always moving forward. And I think that's sort of how life is designed for us. So that question, tip number 9, is the decision reversible? The last tip, and it's one that for me is the go-to question when I'm facing any choices or decisions, and it cuts right to the chase. And it's a laser wisdom seeking question. And that question is, you know, what decision on my part would make me feel most proud about myself? The word proud there is very powerful because it's the opposite of self-betrayal. And self-betrayal is a big word, but with self-betrayal, it's like, I know I've let myself down, or I could have done that, or I should have done that, or maybe I'm taking the easier option. And as I say, we will always do the best we can with our knowledge and resources and self-awareness. But that question around what decision would make me feel most proud about myself, it's almost like then when my head goes on the pillow at nighttime, it mightn't have been the easiest decision, but I sort of know it was the right decision for me right now. So I hope those few tips have been of benefit to you. Decision-making is such a vast area, but sometimes we just need a different angle on it. And that's the purpose of these podcasts, really, you know, just to give you a different angle on a topic. And if there's one or two pieces that you can take from that, well, that's terrific. So thank you again for tuning in, and until next time.